It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. It's a warm day in Florida. For those of you who aren't here, we have entered our very active hurricane season, supposedly, and that will go until, I think, November. And so we just have lots of heat and humidity between now and when fall arrives sometime towards the end of October. I have as my guest today Arthur Wernick, and we're going to be talking about how to stay healthy, or at least become healthier, during the COVID-19 crisis that we're in. And now I understand we have a virus that's surfaced, a new one in China. So I don't know whether it'll be making its way here or not, but that's what I'm hearing. So Arthur is a clinical pharmacist. He has his doctorate in pharmacy, and he said to make sure that people understood, he's not a doctor of people, but he's the doctor of pills and understanding how to use them correctly if you do need to use them. He does medication therapy management, and I'm going to have him explain what that is in just a second. So if listeners to this program today realize that there is a person in their life that should listen to this program as well, I'm going to share with you that you can go to synergyconnectionradio.com. And when you go there, if you click on show notes, Arthur's show will be at the very top of the list. There are 10 pages of shows. I will be coming up on my 100th show in October, which is hard for me to believe. But I have some amazing guests that have been with me each and every week for the past almost 2 years. So you can find Arthur's show there when it airs, and it'll be airing October the 18th is when the show will actually be airing. So if you think that somebody should understand maybe medication management, they have a lot of prescriptions, maybe a lot of those prescriptions are kind of fighting with each other, then please go to the website, have them tune in to Arthur's show. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to explain what medication management actually is.
Well, thank you for having me, Lucy. It's a pleasure to be here. As a clinical pharmacist, my area of expertise is medication therapy management. What I do is I perform a complete analysis and assessment of a patient's entire medication use. I do it in coordination with their clinical conditions and their lifestyle, so I look at the whole patient and not just the medications. People I typically work with have multiple clinical conditions or disease states, take multiple medications, and are usually under the care of more than one doctor.
And do the doctors talk to each other?
That's my main effort. That's what my goal is. That's what my desire is. The goal is to be able to have everybody knowing what the patient is doing at the same time. That's an ideal situation. In some cases where the primary care physician is very conscientious, they do make sure that the medications are coordinated, but so often that's not the case.
Yeah, it's like everybody specializes and then they know their little part of the puzzle. And then the patient ends up with, you know, sometimes 10, 15, 20 different meds they're taking. And, you know, what do you do?
Well, that can create problems, and that's where I step in.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, obviously, doing the research and trying to figure out what the problems are is a challenge. But sometimes a larger problem is trying to get the physicians to coordinate the care. In other words, being able to try to have a patient reduce the amount of medications they take means that one physician might feel like they're going against the other in terms of what medications the patient will or will not take. That's a little bit of the delicate part.
I would think so. Let's kind of give an example. Like if somebody came in and they had a heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
So they're seeing their cardiologist. They're probably seeing their primary care physician.
Mm-hmm.
What other physicians might they be seeing as well?
Well, if the patient has aches and pains, they're seeing maybe a rheumatologist, or they're maybe seeing an orthopedic person. If they have emotional or social concerns, they might be getting mental health care.
Mm-hmm.
And the interactions with those medications can be exquisitely dangerous.
So what do you do if you're if somebody is contacting you and they have either a loved one or maybe they themselves realize that they have way too many medications going? Do they bring all the bottles to you, or how does that work?
Well, the system that I have, the program that I offer for medication therapy management, is very comprehensive. It involves a one-hour introductory meeting with the patient, like an intake meeting, and that would be with the patient or a family member, anybody that the patient wishes to have there. And that's where I get all my information. It's an information gathering process for me. I ask questions and I listen. So yes, a medication list is clearly one of the most important parts. I need to have a list of the diagnoses as well. Everything that their physicians say is wrong with them, so that I can match up the medications with their clinical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people may not be aware of this, but every medication that we take, every single one, even supplements, should have some kind of defined clinical reason for taking it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't take medications just in case or for what if.
Right.
Every medication should have a specific cause. So I look at their medications. I look at their list of diagnoses. I talk about their lifestyle, diet, and exercise. I really want to get to know my patient. I want to know what it takes for them to get through a day. How well are they eating? When are they eating? How much exercise are they able to do?
Mm-hmm.
That plays a big role in me determining how to arrange recommendations for the patient, how to arrange more support for the patient.
And would this be true of any age, or do you primarily work with senior citizens?
It works for any age.
Okay.
Because one of the more unfortunate aspects is when I deal with a younger person, maybe somebody in their 20s or 30s, that's taking 12, 15 different medications
a day. What diagnosis would they have to take that many?
It can be any spectrum. It generally is in the field of mental health. It can be in the field of cardiology. It certainly can be in the field of diabetes management.
Yeah.
And it's not hard once you start looking at two or three different significant clinical situations that the medications pile up.
And then a lot of I'm just thinking here to myself, a lot of the younger people might have asthma, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and that would prevent them from doing a lot of the exercises that maybe other kids can do. So mm-hmm. then that creates maybe depression or anxiety for them, and they might have to be using a medication for that as well.
That's absolutely true, and that cuts across several age groups, because no matter what age group we're in, we all want to be able to participate to
mm-hmm.
the maximum extent in that, you know, in the realm that we're in.
Right.
And sometimes what exercise is to one person is maybe not very much exercise to another, but the goal is to do the amount of exercise and be as engaged as you reasonably can, given the circumstances.
What do you recommend exercise-wise? You know, just as a general foundation for people. I've heard everything from 20 minutes to an hour every day.
Walking is number one.
Okay.
As much as a person can walk. Because when you're walking, you can also practice your breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And those two go very much hand in hand. Any amount of physical exercise is advisable. When I worked in the pharmacy, people would come in and ask about, how can I lose weight? I want to lose weight. And I would say, you want to lose weight, but I don't want you to take any pills to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would reach under the counter, and I had these 2 5-pound dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put them up on the counter. I'd say, here, take these, walk down the aisle, turn around, and come back. And I said, did you feel that? I said, that's what you're carrying around for only 10 pounds.
Right.
To be able to lose even 10 pounds, you will feel the difference.
Right.
Maybe your knees will feel better. Maybe your back will feel better. Maybe your blood sugar will go down. Maybe your blood pressure will go down.
And did the pharmacy sell 5-pound dumbbells?
That's
hope.
Where I got them from. I take them off the shelf. They weren't a hot seller, I'll tell you that.
Do you know, I've often told women that consult with me, and, you know, they're worried about bone density.
Uh-huh.
All right, so I said, walk, but carry weights with you, because that will help build stronger bones. You know, it's the resistance
uh-huh.
of having
yeah.
extra weight with
yeah.
you. And for a lot of women that have osteoporosis, their frames are small frames. You know, they are lightweights.
Uh-huh.
And so those are the ones that typically will end up with an osteoporosis condition. Whereas, you know, a heavier lady that, you know, used to work on the farm or, you know, worked in
uh-huh.
a factory,
yeah. Yeah.
she doesn't usually have that condition. She might have diabetes, she might have cardiovascular ailments, but she doesn't have the osteoporosis. So it's just interesting how you have to find that middle ground, to move towards from either end.
But, you know, this is part of what's wonderful about our knowledge and technology these days. We can tailor a therapeutic program to the patient's individual needs. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to something like that, it's very possible to do. And changes don't have to be dramatic. Changes can be incremental.
So what would you look for, let's say, with somebody who said, I want to lose weight? What would be the incremental that would get them to where they need to be to actually be healthy?
Okay. Well, I'm a pharmacist and not a nutritionist. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you this much. I can give initial advice. When I'm doing these medication reviews for a patient, if they obviously would benefit from a nutritional program, I have people I can refer them to. This is part of the environment of networking and knowing other allied healthcare professionals that I can refer people to, physical therapists, nutritionists, mental health people. But I can go to a certain point. So it's evident that a patient might benefit by losing some weight. I tell them, begin by eating less of the same. Just start by eating less of the same. And I use a universal type of mindset that says, if you want to change your diet, you first have to change your mind. You have to change the way you think first. There'll be much greater success if you change the way you think. All changes should be gradual. Mm-hmm. And I use an example. It's very simple. If salt is in the recipe, use it. If salt is on the table, don't. That's how you take one incremental step at a time. Reduce the amount of salt. Slowly. Reduce the amount of sugar you take. Avoid things that come in plastic bags, sealed plastic bags. One step at a time. See what you can then give up. Maybe one of those things you can give up. And you go one step at a time. And obviously, seek nutritional counseling. One of the very old school methods of losing weight, I still think has some validity, although I'm not going to be able to cite a current study for it. They used to say, if you lose a pound a week, you're very unlikely to gain it back. The slower you lose weight, the greater the chance you have of keeping it off. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't care who you are. 10 weeks is 10 pounds. That matters to everybody.
It absolutely does. Yeah, it does. I think a lot of people don't realize how much sugar is in everything.
Uh-huh.
If they walk up and down the aisle, salad dressings, condiments, cereals, bread. I mean, if you shop the perimeter, they always said that that's the healthiest place to be. But looking at labels, my son was diagnosed a couple of years ago now with a very interesting condition. And he had to start looking at labels. Uh-huh. And, you know, cheese has not just the preservatives, but the amount of salt that is in cheese as a preservative. Yep. It was crazy, you know, because all of a sudden everything that he liked at that moment, he wasn't able to really use anymore.
Right.
And so then he had to start substituting, and it's been amazing for him because he's learned, you know, how to be a chef.
Yes.
But, you know, it's all natural herbs. Uh-huh. It's clean food.
Yep.
And occasionally he will do something fun like a breakfast burrito, but it's not that often anymore. Whereas before, he might have had it on a really regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, and sugar. Sugar is one of the biggest causes for inflammation
in
the body.
Yes.
And all disease comes from inflammation.
Uh-huh.
And so if you cut back on your drinks, your Cokes, your Mountain Dews, your things that have a lot of sugar in it, you're going to reduce the inflammation in your body and therefore head towards a healthier place.
Mm-hmm. One of the best ways that people can reasonably and very practically begin to change the quality of their food is to buy locally. You have a better chance of having less chemicals, less additives, and no matter where you live now, there is an opportunity to get something locally, whether it be even begin with vegetables. I've heard of people starting just with lettuce. They were going to buy local lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
Local food probably is a little bit healthier. It may not be free of all the things that we wish they were, but it might have less of the chemicals in it. It's locally sourced. It comes from a place that's nearby. And the opportunity is that if it's not mass produced, it's very likely to be healthier to some degree.
Right, right. I have a little produce stand that's not too far from me that I recommend to people. And it's actually fun to go there because, I mean, everything is presented very well. Uh-huh. I used to go to farmers markets, but now we can't really do that because of COVID. So the produce store, you know, is almost like a farmer's market. It does. It has one person that's doing it all. But nevertheless, I mean, they have homemade breads and, you know, lots of veggies, lots of fruit. Mm-hmm. And with Florida, we're fortunate in that we do have a lot of produce all the time that's not being shipped in.
Right.
It's being locally grown.
Yep, that's correct.
When we talk about, you know, like a person that is getting in touch with you, the reason that they're getting in touch, is it primarily because they suddenly have an aha moment, like I am taking way too many medications and I'm feeling less and less healthy? Is that
what? Well, when it comes to the individual themselves contacting me, that usually is the case. They feel like this has gone a little too far. And they feel like they're not themselves anymore, that they're almost under the influence of the effects of the medications. And that goes beyond what the medications are intended to do. It's just a different feeling they get.
Right.
When it comes to a family member consulting me on behalf of somebody else, they feel like the situation is out of control. They finally realize that their parent is on 15 different medications a day.
And maybe not
and
even
what are
taking
all these
them
for?
Right.
Yeah, and the right definitely way. There's a large chance that they're not taking them right.
Hmm.
And so I would be brought in sometimes for that kind of circumstance too.
How does the, if it's a parent, how does the parent react to that kind of intervention? Do they go along with it and go, I need to understand this better?
You have to have them go along with it.
Okay.
You absolutely have to. I do initial consultations before I meet with people. I assure them of what my process is. The key to the process that I use, as much as it is to educate the patient and inform them and help them make some changes, the key is to create a very technical report for their physicians outlining the recommended changes.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I provide the physician with the information that says, here's a problem, here's its effect on the patient, here's a potential solution.
Can you give an actual example?
An actual example might be something like a patient taking 4 or 5, and this is very possible, 4 or 5 different medications for high blood pressure. There are at least 5 or 6 different ways to try to control blood pressure. So there's 5 or 6 different categories of medications for it. And within each category, there might be anywhere between 5 and 10 different drugs.
Okay.
So if a patient is taking 4 or 5 different medications for high blood pressure, I look at the doses, I look at the patient's blood pressure records, I try to determine if there's maybe a chance that they could do as well on 3 medications instead. One of the key things I look at is compliance. Is the patient able to take the medication in the way that it's prescribed?
Mm-hmm.
When a patient is on 8, 10, 15 different medications a day, it's inevitable that doses are going to be missed. So a patient has high blood pressure, the doctor puts them on a couple medications. They're not able to take them the right way for whatever reason, whether it be they forget or they can't afford them all. They go back to the doctor. The blood pressure isn't where it should be because they're not able to take the medications properly. The doctor adds a third medication. This is a very common problem. It happens with blood pressure medications. It happens with diabetes medications. So I try to help the patient understand techniques for being able to take the medications the way they're prescribed.
And what might be some of those techniques?
Well, in some cases, the medications are designed to be taken with food. So if it's twice a day, the ideal situation when a drug is twice a day is to take it as close to every 12 hours as is reasonable. That keeps a consistent amount of the medication in your blood system. But if the medication is more compatible and more effective with food, then we look at the morning meal and the evening meal, of course, and try to set them up doing that. Thyroid medication is supposed to be taken on an empty stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That's an area of very high compliance. Most people that take thyroid medications are doing it properly. The main reason is because you need to take it on an empty stomach. So most people get up. Yeah, exactly. They get up, they take it.
Yeah.
So you try to use that kind of example to apply to other medications.
Right.
A lot of the cholesterol medications are ideal at bedtime. The drug likes to work at night when nothing else is going on.
Uh-huh.
So a bedtime drug, easier to remember.
Uh-huh.
When it's twice a day or 3 times a day, we try to mark it out in ways that are convenient for the patient. Despite the fact that these folks were on many different drugs a day, my goal is to try to simplify the situation and not make it more complicated.
Right. With, my background as in mental health, but also in nutrition, and I look at the fact that magnesium and potassium are so important for cardiovascular health.
Correct.
And so do cardiologists remember to look at those levels, to see if they fall in an optimal range, or do they just immediately go to medication?
Generally, a patient that's under that kind of care is going to have one of those standard blood tests at least twice a year.
Okay.
The standard blood tests that are given when a patient goes in and they, quote, take blood, generally is always going to have all those chemicals measured.
Mm-hmm.
Magnesium, potassium, they're all in a range. It's very normal for them to be reviewed, and if a patient is low or high, adjustments can be made.
Mm-hmm.
My role in that often is examining their blood levels in relation to what medications may increase potassium or decrease potassium, and the same with magnesium and other chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So having too much of something maybe is not as healthy as having too little.
Right, right. And it is complicated. It's not an easy thing for the average person to understand that their diet may be playing such a huge role. I was talking to somebody, in fact, yesterday, and they have a relative that is in a facility right now, and of course they can't go visit because of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't take in nutritional supplements.
Right.
They can't take in healthier food. And this is something that absolutely blows me away, I guess is the way I want to say this, is when you have an assisted care facility or a nursing home, it is totally amazing to me the amount of sugar that they put on the trays.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that people that are not feeling well or people that are over the age, let's say, of 60 that might be in the facility, they all have sweet tooths,
mm-hmm.
And so they know they'll eat something.
Yeah.
If they have something that's sweet. And yet, that's probably the worst thing they could be eating.
It probably is. It probably is. It's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cliche that says that, patients with diabetes obviously have a specific diet.
Right.
And the cliche is that a good diet for a diabetic is a good diet for everybody.
That's probably very, very true.
Yeah.
Because even just like white potatoes, uh-huh. Sweet potatoes are so much better for you. But a lot of people don't like sweet potatoes. And they'll eat a white potato. But that has all of the carbs that are not good for you in it. Whereas a sweet potato has carbs that are actually beneficial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a whole mindset change
in
terms of the way they eat. What about a man who comes in and, I had a lot of men that I've known over the years that had high blood pressure.
Uh-huh.
And they get put on a high blood pressure medication. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then their libido is gone. So how does that person handle it? I mean, if you have high blood pressure medication, can they take Cialis or, those other kinds of meds? Or is it just it's not going to function and that's the end of that?
They most certainly can. And obviously that might provide some incentive to be able to control blood pressure in ways other than medications.
Mm-hmm.
A patient that has high blood pressure, there are many that they seem fine. It doesn't seem they're not overweight. Maybe their diet is good. But for the majority of people on high blood pressure medications, there are techniques that they can use to take less of the medication.
What would be some of those techniques?
Diet and exercise.
Okay.
We hear it over and over again.
How about meditation? Does that help with?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It slows us down. Anything that slows us down. A breathing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that relaxes our system is, think of the phrase, relax our system.
Mm-hmm.
Reduces our blood pressure.
Right, right. A lot of the people that I know that have been on high blood pressure medication, they're type A personalities,
mm-hmm.
So it's kind of Katie bar the door, and they're very intense. And I have recommended in the past, I've even taught people, go hug a tree.
Uh-huh.
Go get barefoot and get grounded, out there.
Yep.
And, go, to a park and just sit and watch the water.
Yep.
Get into maybe breathing with the
mm-hmm.
waves.
Mm-hmm. So. Walking barefoot is one of the greatest techniques for relaxation that I have found.
Just don't walk where there's fire ants.
That's right.
And in Florida, we have, you know, some places where that's not so good. But yeah, I moved here from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Uh-huh. And so in Green Bay, our yard was absolutely amazing. So I could walk barefoot all the time there and not run into too much of anything.
That's a treat to be able to do that.
Yes, yeah. So, all right. So let's talk about COVID-19 and with people that are on medication right now, are they more terrified than ever that they're going to come down with this?
Depends what medication they're on, and there would be no reason to think that you're more likely to get the virus depending on your medications. There are people that do take medications that reduce their immunity, and that could be considered a greater risk. In theory, it is. We don't know all that much about the virus in terms of what its effect is like that. Logically, it would seem that a patient that's compromised with their immune system might be more susceptible, but we really don't understand the nature of the virus yet. We know nothing about this when it began, and in some ways, the longer this goes on, the less that is known. Now that we're close to 6 months in with this, information is starting to come out, but it's not hard information. It's what we know at the time, and that can dramatically change as time goes on. We're in a learning situation here. Mm-hmm. We don't really know.
So for people that are saying, come on with the the virus
vaccine?
The vaccine itself. You know, my understanding is that this vaccine that they're in the process of beginning to create, they're doing the research. Yeah. They have the volunteers that are taking the vaccine. In many instances, when it's available for production, which might be in January, they say, of 2021, would you advise people, you know, as a person that understands pharmaceuticals, do you think it's safe for them to go and be one of the first ones to get the vaccine?
I would have to say we just don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what the vaccine is going to be yet.
Right.
So we really don't know.
And we've got different laboratories that are coming at it from different angles.
I have heard that there's over 100 different vaccine types that they're investigating.
Right. That you can't take 100 vaccines.
They think that all of this changes on a daily basis, but they think that there may be as many as 5 or 6 that are marketed. And there'll be 5 or 6 different ones.
So how would you know which one
you
to
don't.
Take?
Yeah. Right now, we don't. Hopefully, in the next 6 months, things will be more understood, more defined. The one thing that is going to be hard to determine before it happens is the safety of the product. Mm-hmm. We're just not going to know that. And without even knowing what the active ingredient is in the vaccine, we don't know how long it will take to determine how safe it is.
Or how long it's going to be valid. You know, like some people have said it might work for 3 months.
Right.
And at the end of 3 months, do you have to take another one?
It's going to be completely unknown. It could be like the flu vaccine where you need it every year because it changes so much.
Wow.
And a vaccine has never been developed as quickly. I believe that the quickest vaccine ever developed took 4 years. And a great deal of that had to do with understanding its safety profile.
Right.
That's critical.
Do you remember thalidomide?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so that was a vaccine that nobody realized the consequences.
Oral pill.
Or it was oral.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was one that people didn't realize the consequences when they took it.
Yeah.
You know, they just took it.
Yep.
And then had the consequences down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, the safety profile, that was completely misunderstood.
Right. So we could have a similar situation just because they're trying to come up with it so quickly.
It's interesting that you bring that up because in a way it does mirror that. It does remind people of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that the safety profile really is as important. Understanding the safety profile is as important as the effectiveness of the medication itself.
Right.
There's no way around that. That has to be determined over time.
Right. And I don't know. I'm very fearful that people are going to jump the gun believing that it's the magic bullet. You know, now I'm safe.
That may be the case. What they're trying to determine now is if a person is exposed and has the virus, are they still immune to getting the illness?
Mm-hmm.
And that's still not known. or how long are they protected if they are immune? Completely unknown. If the virus mutates, is what you are protected against no longer what you have to worry about now?
Right. The other thing that I believe is coming to surface, and it kind of goes back to making sure that we do take care of ourselves as we mm-hmm. go into any aspect of our lives, is that we have a lot of times undiagnosed ailments.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we may be sitting in our living room, in our, you know, sleeping. We might be out, you know, in public. And we're walking around with a condition that has not ever been diagnosed.
Uh-huh.
That might be pre-diabetic, might be a pre-high blood pressure condition, might be pre-cancer. It's mm-hmm. not been diagnosed. But a lot of different kinds of ailments that are out there. And as a result, we're going to now have a compromised immune system that we didn't even know we had. Okay, follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the people that are coming down, we have a growing number of cases. Part of it is because of the testing. And the testing has said, oh, yes, you do have it. And it was, you know, mm-hmm. at a milder rate, so you didn't need to be hospitalized, but you do have it. So I guess I'm just trying to, you know, process myself that as people are being diagnosed, maybe their immune system wasn't where it needed to be to begin with. And they didn't even realize it because they were eating a lot of processed foods. They
yes.
were
yeah.
not getting enough sleep. They weren't exercising.
Uh-huh.
They didn't do any of the things to keep themselves
right.
healthy.
Right.
Do
right.
you agree that it kind of...
Yeah, I do agree completely, but trying to be realistic about it, the horse is out of the barn, so to speak.
It is.
So, we could talk about that, and it's a very valid area to look at. But at the same time, it's not where we are right at this moment.
People begin to address, you know, their own responsibilities?
If this changes people's minds about
mm-hmm.
how they're going to look at their own health
mm-hmm.
and their own care,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
This would be certainly a wonderful opportunity for that to happen.
And to me, it kind of fits with the environment. You know, that all of a sudden, because we weren't driving as much, the air quality improved.
Certainly.
Just
yeah.
because we weren't flying around, you know, the skies became bluer.
Yes.
So there are things that we can actually look at and say, this made a difference.
Absolutely. Except that what you hear in the media a lot of times isn't that people are getting healthier. People are gaining weight because they're sitting at home.
Well, they're just not doing
yeah.
the things they need
this
to do.
This is a golden opportunity
yeah.
to yeah. adapt
right.
small changes that
right.
matter.
Well, what's happened, I think, is that a lot of people are baking breads.
Yeah.
They're baking wonderful cakes and cookies
uh-huh.
and things like that. So, again, the sugar intake
yep.
probably has increased, and the exercise level, they've become more couch potatoes.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean that they could not have taken walks.
Right.
You know, they could have done some of those things, but they stayed inside. Here's the other thing that I think you will understand what I'm saying here, that I've been telling people, is that when you are inundated with fear, you know, day in
yes.
and day out,
yep.
people are constantly being told how many new cases have been diagnosed,
yes.
how many people have died. So your cells on a cellular level, we were talking about vibrational
yes.
frequencies earlier, but when your cells hear the word dying and, you know, all of the
uh-huh.
fear-based things, we're actually reducing our own immune system because the fear suppresses
yep.
our own immunity.
I understand.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I tell people, start looking at the good that can come from this. Where are some places that you can say my life maybe has improved, and look there because of awareness, because of communication
yep.
is better, because
yes.
you're spending more time with your kids?
I have heard from several people that one of the things that makes them feel better is just the very fact that everything is slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
That it has a calming effect on people.
Right.
They feel more peaceful. And I've heard that from several people. The energy out there is so much more relaxed and calm when we had the lockdown that it seemed to make a difference in some people's minds, that this was relaxing. and maybe obviously for all the wrong reasons, but at the same time, there was a sense of relief among some people.
Mm-hmm. You know, an interesting feature that has come back since we've opened the state back up, when people were not driving very much and staying home, you know, I think that there was that sense of maybe a little more peacefulness.
Uh-huh.
But there was anxiety because a lot of them had lost their jobs.
Sure.
And, you know, where are they going to get the money to pay the rent, buy
right.
food, and those kind of things. Even though the roads aren't as crowded as they were, I had just heard maybe a week ago that the accident rate is actually up. And I'm wondering if that is because people either, one, haven't been driving for a while in traffic and they aren't as conscious, or because their anxiety is so high now that they have trouble focusing, you know, on things like driving.
That's very possible. That's very possible.
Hmm. And I don't know what the answer is for that either, you know, other than, you know, trying to get centered and trying to figure out, you know, a plan of attack. As we look at, and is that affecting medication too? I mean, I wonder if doctors are having to increase their anti-anxiety meds or antidepressants or...
What we're hearing most of all is that people are getting less health care right now than more because of the inability to go to a doctor as you used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that people, their concern is that people may be letting things go that need to be attended to.
Are any of the doctors doing internet
yes,
visits?
Yes, quite a bit.
Okay,
quite a bit.
So
yep.
A patient that maybe can't get in or doesn't want to go maybe to the emergency
right.
room, they would have access?
Yeah, and depending on the practice, depending on the different types of physician practices, telehealth is becoming much more common. Telephone consultations are obviously much more common. If the provider knows the patient well, then they can sometimes avoid an actual visit. They know what's going on with the patient in general. They can understand what changes have occurred in the last several months, even though they haven't seen the patient, and they can provide some kind of assistance. But the concern overall is that people aren't getting the health care that they are needing. Hospitals are having layoffs throughout the nation. They have had to stop elective surgeries. We hear that quite commonly. But the fact is that people are just going less because of this. They're getting less care.
So the people that are having to deal with COVID-19 patients are being worked to death, whereas other areas of the hospital are getting laid off.
Yes, yes.
Isn't
and this is a sign of the times. We don't know what to do. Nobody really knows how this is supposed to go. So it makes sense. You put the resources where the need is the greatest. And in this case, the resources to this need are tremendous. So it does mean that other areas are going to be diminished.
That's a sobering thought.
It's a sobering thought. We don't have a plan for this.
Right.
I don't think we do.
Well, I wonder how many, you know, like individual clinics, practices, medical practices, what are they doing? Do you know?
I think there are places where you have to get an appointment. Some were closed, now more opening up, and precautions are widespread. People taking dramatic precautions in each place.
So what are the precautions that you would recommend to somebody maybe listening to the program and saying, all right, so I know I have high blood pressure, I know I'm dealing with anxiety, I know maybe I have COPD, I know, you know, I'm diabetic. I mean, if they have a diagnosed condition
mm-hmm.
and they're looking at COVID-19 and even other viruses that we know are going to come, mm-hmm. what are your suggestions from where you sit?
Maintain the medication therapy as reliably as they can. Try to plan ahead so that they always have the medication that they're supposed to have. That's the number one thing. To be able to continue as usual as possible in terms of your medical therapy.
And, you know, how do they go about doing that?
By making sure they can get their refills, by trying to get their refills ahead of time. Many insurance plans have allowed for them to be able to fill early in order to be able to have the medications that they're supposed to have. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's almost like treading water, but right now that's the single best thing that any patient can do that's on maintenance medications. And I would imagine at this point they are clearly aware of that, given the circumstances.
Hmm. Yeah, I think like Walgreens and Costco, you know, being the two bigger pharmacies around us, mm-hmm. but almost all of them let you fill, don't they, for like up to 3 months?
Those things are controlled by the insurance plans for the most part, and that's unfortunate. But the insurance plans have relaxed their regulations so that a person that gets a 30-day supply that's billed to insurance usually can't get it filled until 25, 26, 27 days to the 30-day supply. And now that they've relaxed those restrictions a little bit, people have a little bit more flexibility. So if they can get out, they can go get it, and it might be a week ahead of time, but then they've got it for the next month.
Mm-hmm. How about the ones that are shipping medications? Are there, you know, companies that are doing that where your doctor can go direct to AstraZeneca or something like that?
Yeah, most of those programs don't require any in-person activity, so mm-hmm. they still are maintained, yeah.
Yeah.
Things like that, mail order prescriptions or medications that are provided directly from the drug company, all that seems to still be working if the supply is there.
So it's more the issues are a little more because of your insurance plan, and they had to more or less adjust the plan because of COVID-19. That's
yeah,
what you're
yeah.
saying.
They pretty much control that.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. Were there people that weren't able to get their medication? I think I heard at the very beginning that some of these pills were even being manufactured in China, so they weren't coming out of China.
A great deal of our medication is manufactured overseas.
And is that because of cost?
Always.
Always?
Yeah, I don't mean to sound cynical, but that usually is the reason.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to conceptualize, but it costs less to have it made halfway around the world and put on a ship and sent to air and put on trucks than it is to have it made down the street and put in a truck and brought to the store.
And in your mind as a pharmacist that saw all this, did you ever have any fear of medications that were made in China or elsewhere coming back into the United States, that maybe the efficacy of that particular medication was not quite what it should be?
Well, we are actually currently dealing with that, unfortunately. There are contaminants that have been found in certain medications that are additives to the active ingredient that are potential cancer-causing chemicals to human beings. And those are currently in processes of being recalled. And that is due to impurities that have been added somehow to the manufacturing process for medications that have been made overseas.
So were those medications, do you think that was like a stabilizing? I don't know whether it would have been a stabilizing situation or not, but I don't know whether it was, you know, sometimes they can add fillers, and that's the way something can get in.
It's not entirely clear how these chemicals have been getting into the medications. It may have to do with processing the medications, the additives as they're combined, potentially create a chemical reaction that creates this toxic chemical.
Hmm.
That it's not a toxic chemical directly added, but once they've added all other components to it, there's a chemical reactions that create this toxic product that's well known.
And they didn't know that that was taking place, obviously.
Oh, they knew it was there, except that over the years they have what they call acceptable or allowable limits of those contaminants in these products.
Mm.
And it was found that the allowable limits were beginning to be exceeded.
Exceeded?
Yes.
A lot of people have heard me, you know, talk about my husband, and you know, he is deceased and has been now for a couple of years. But one of the medications that he was on was, and I can't name names. I can tell you on the side, but I can't name
yeah,
names on the radio.
I understand.
But it is a major, major pharmaceutical company, and he was one of 1% of men that was diagnosed 14 years ago now with breast cancer. And it's still a very, very small percentage of men that, come down with this. But the medication that they recommend for women, you know, is fine, you know, for the most part. Women can take this particular drug and not have the side effects that he got. But he had been on one that has been around for a long, long time, for 6 years, called tamoxifen. Mm-hmm. I can name that one. And the tamoxifen did its job. And then they said, you know, like with many women, they said, you know, you're cancer-free. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half later, his markers went up and they went, whoops, you know, we've got something else going on. And at that point, they put him on this particular drug that we were told, you know, hey, no problem. He'll live the rest of his life using this mm-hmm. drug. Well, it turns out that if you dig a little bit, there are a lot of class action suits now mm-hmm. against yep. that particular drug, uh-huh. especially with men, but yep. even with some women.
Yep.
And what he ended up having was very much like Parkinson's.
Uh-huh.
He started shuffling when he walked. He would fall asleep instantly. You know, if we were eating, you could look and all of a sudden his face would be down and you had to watch that he didn't drop mm-hmm. off into his food. Mm-hmm. But they did not understand that it was the drug. They looked for other reasons. And eventually, you know, it was clear that these were side effects from this particular
yeah.
drug, although
yeah,
they were rare.
Yes.
They
yes.
were the side effects.
Uh-huh.
And we got him off of it. But at that point, he'd been on it 6 months. And so the rest of his life was compromised
yes.
until he died. So I think that a lot of people don't understand that not all drugs are equal for all people.
That is true.
And that you know, just because this drug worked for your brother or your sister or your aunt or uncle or somebody does not mean that it's the end-all drug for you. It might or might not work. I had one. I don't take anything, but I had my physician that I see, mm-hmm. you know, my cholesterol level was higher than she wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, oh, we're going to put you on this. And, you know, I couldn't be on it because it affected my muscles. And
mm-hmm.
then she said, okay, I'm going to put you on this one instead.
Yeah.
And I was on it for maybe 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up one morning and I could not feel my tongue.
Oh.
It was totally numb.
Uh-huh.
And I called her because without your tongue, you can't talk very well.
Right.
And I called her and I said, there's something. And she said, oh my gosh. She said, stop taking that immediately. You will be one of those individuals that can never take a statin drug of any kind.
Right. Yep.
And that was the end of it, you know, and so I use other methods that are more natural
mm-hmm.
to keep. But also, do you know that a lot of people over the age of 65 need their cholesterol a little bit higher because of brain function?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
A lot of people don't know that.
Well, you know, first of all, when it comes to side effects of medications, it would be helpful to share with folks that when you take a medication, the drug doesn't know where to go. It doesn't know what's wrong with you, for the most part. You take a medication, it goes everywhere throughout our system.
Uh-huh.
So eventually it gets to where it's needed to be.
Uh-huh.
It gets here sooner or later, but it goes everywhere. And so there's opportunities, that's where side effects arise. There's opportunities for these medications to have effects in other parts of our body that we really don't need it to have an effect.
Right.
So very often the ones we notice are the negative effects, the adverse effects. But it affects all of our systems.
You know what's interesting to me with stem cells, and you're probably familiar
mm-hmm.
with how they
yeah.
work, but I use a stem cell patch,
uh-huh.
And stem cells go right where they're needed most,
uh-huh.
which is so interesting versus drugs.
Well, they're targeted that way,
mm-hmm.
yes, they are.
So stem cells have this little intelligence that goes, oh, we need to rebuild
mm-hmm.
cartilage over here, or we need to do this over here. Whereas, like you say, a medication just simply goes throughout your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, in order for those stem cells to get there, they have to go through our circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that circulation doesn't have gates that say, stem cells over here, another drug over there. You know?
No, that's
it just
true.
Doesn't have the negative effect that right. it would have otherwise.
Right. I don't know whether you're familiar with this, but I had gone to a stem cell presentation, which was very interesting. And they are using it through, I guess, if they tilt somebody, you know, like with their head down and drip amniotic stem cells through the nasal membrane, it goes right into the brain.
That could be ideal.
And they showed before and after pictures of people that have Alzheimer's. And it was amazing. It was just absolutely amazing because then they could go in, the stem cells could go in and begin to regenerate brain cells.
That's ideal.
It is.
That is ideal.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. You know, to have that.
So as much as we're looking at different medications and new technologies, the delivery of the medications has become a science now, maybe for the last 20 years or so.
Right.
Effective, novel delivery of medication
makes
the actual medication more effective.
Right. And I know that they are injecting, again, amniotic, but you can have it injected into a joint where it needs to be rebuilt. And, you know, safe surgery. And there's no surgery that's ever safe.
That's true. That's
It should be the last resort, not the first. And I think some of our medications probably need to be the same way. You know, maybe a last resort, but people that are already on them can't necessarily just get off, can they?
No, no. But these things can be done in time. They can take time. There are certain circumstances. And, you know, medications are made for those kind of people. But that not made for everybody, so that there are certain circumstances. I mean, you have a type 1 diabetic, there's no question what you need to do, okay? You have a person with high blood pressure, there are some things you can do. If it's determined that there's some kind of organic problem in the patient's body, there's something wrong with their kidneys, there's something wrong with their hearts, maybe you really don't have a lot of wiggle room, so to speak. But there are most circumstances you can have an influence beyond needing the medication itself.
Right. A lot of the more holistic doctors, are, do you work with them as well?
I work with every allied health care professional that I can get my hands on, yes.
Okay. And do you find that if they've had some training, at least in nutrition and alternative methods, that they speak your language a little more easily?
In many cases, they are prepared for all the different approaches. They may not be professional at all of them or practiced at all of them, but they are aware and prepared at all of them. So in many cases, those kind of practitioners are going to know where that patient is able to have the maximum amount of influence and where that patient strictly needs support.
Do you do conference calls ever with, you know, like a doctor that agrees to get, maybe, like you said earlier, there might be a mental health person, there might be you know, somebody who's an orthopedic that has had to do a hip replacement or a knee replacement, and then you've got somebody else that is the cardiovascular. So can you ever get all three of them on a conference call?
When I create my report for the providers, it's the same report for all the patient's physicians that outlines the recommended changes that only a doctor can make. I am always available to consult with them concerning that. And I have been a pharmacist for many years. I have seen the entire spectrum. On one side, I'll have a doctor say, I don't need to know anything. I know everything about my patient. Get them to read the report.
Oh, dear.
I get to the other extreme where they say, tell me everything you know. So I have, and everything in between, obviously. But so I've seen all the different pieces of that. I can only do my end and do it as well as I can professionally do it. And it's up to them from there. Most cases nowadays, physicians are willing to try to reduce the amount of medications patients take. Sometimes they kind of take the bull by the horn and just go to the other extreme. I had a circumstance where a patient was taking 12 different medications. I recommended a gradual reduction in three or four of them, and the doctor just cut out half of them. They got the idea. And they decided, okay, well, I can even do better than that, you know.
Well, that's good, though.
Yeah.
One of the concerns that I've always had is, unfortunately, it seems like the pharmaceutical companies are the educational component for doctors.
It has become that way, unfortunately,
and so, you know, it's a sales pitch, you know, and that's what they remember. And, of course, that is probably happening a little bit less right at the moment because they're not doing the major dinners that are being sponsored. But
that's still the realm we exist in. There's a movement in Canada and in Great Britain called, it's not an elegant phrase, but it's called de-prescribing. So it's the science of reducing the amount of medications that people take. In the health field, people like me periodically hear the anecdotal line that they took that person off of every medication. They just stopped everything, and you wouldn't believe it, that person's so much better than before. Mm. Well, in Canada, they're studying this. They're studying it at universities, private institutes. They are systematically reducing the amount of medication in eligible patients, recording the results, and trying to determine what the value is. Out of the gate, they had found out some years ago that the quality of life of these patients always improved, almost always improved. As far as length of life or anything like that, there's no real data. But the idea is that they are trying to systematically reduce the amount that people take and observe the results in a scientific way.
I'm glad they're doing that, yeah. Personally.
And unfortunately, here we're still in the business of selling medication and not reducing it, but I've heard that there's still a little bit of movement in this country, independent people trying to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, won't make pharmaceutical companies happy, because obviously that's how they make their money, is creating new drugs and getting, you know, prescriptions sold. But maybe altruistically, we could, you know, look at the betterment of mankind rather than just profit margins.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't even raise it to the level of altruism. It just makes common sense to have people take as little medication as possible and have them feel as well as possible.
Right.
There's a great deal of medication that's being used that probably isn't necessary this time.
Right. You know, years ago I was in England, and are you familiar with a group of herbs called Bach Remedies?
No.
Okay, it's B-A-C-H, just like the musician. But Bach Remedies were, and probably still are, you know, utilized there, and they're all from plants.
Uh-huh.
And that is a lot of how they did their health care. Was, you know, look at plants first. They've been around forever. You know, God put them here for a reason. And they're not man-made chemicals.
Right.
You know, they're natural.
That's our traditional medicine.
Right, right. And so, I mean, you know, the shamans of old, the medicine women and men of old, they understood, you know, how to get healthy and stay healthy by using nature.
It's a matter of semantics, of vocabulary. Alternative medicine is not alternative, it's the traditional medicine.
It is the traditional. We've gotten away from it because somebody once said, you know, okay, these two powders together do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, very, very interesting discussion this morning. I want to thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always fun, and, you know, just to open up communication with another avenue of learning about how to stay healthy and take responsibility, I guess, for ourselves. Again, I want people to know how to find you.
Okay. My email is arthurwernick@gmail.com, arthurwernick, one word, @gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be reached by phone, 727-451-9343.
All right. So a lot of people, I'm sure, are listening, and they're maybe looking at their own pantry or wherever they keep their prescriptions and going, I think I need to talk to Arthur. Or maybe you have a loved one in your family that needs to have a consultation with Arthur, too. So,
well, I offer a variety of different services depending on the patient's needs, and I'm willing to talk to anybody about any kind of circumstance that's particular to them. I am very aware that everybody's circumstance is unique.
So if that person missed listening to the show today, be sure to go to synergyconnectionradio.com, and the website, or not website, but the email address for Arthur will be there, and you'll be able to send him an email and be in touch and utilize his amazing services. Let's, you know, all try to get healthy together. So maybe if we don't need the vaccine, you know, we'll have alternate ways of protecting ourselves as the months go by. If you do decide to go into the website, you'll see that Boomers Forever Young has a link there. Please go check it out. There are amazing videos and blogs and a ton of information about their products. If you make the decision to order any of the products, if you use my name, Lucy, you will get $5 off of your order. And in the meantime, go out there and make this your very best life. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you again next Saturday. Bye-bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.